a compendium of audio theater, comedy, and the audio arts. With your host, Jerry Stearns. Well, good evening to you. I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, we're beginning a few weeks of, let's call them spooky stories, the kind of suspense things that many people adore. Later on, we'll start a series called Tales of the Museum, but we're going to start tonight with this piece, which is a 2004 Ogle Award winner for Best Horror Audio from the Willamette Radio Workshop in Portland, Oregon. It's called Next Year's Girl. It's about a girl and a monster and unexpected events. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to Next Year's Girl.
The Willamette Radio Workshop presents Next Year's Girl by Heather Breeden.
In the autumn of my 18th year, I was sacrificed to the beast by the people of my village. It sounds dreadful, doesn't it? We'd always done it, you see. Each year, the black carriage came down from the castle and took a girl away, and the castle and the beast would leave us in peace for another year. It happened in my mother's time, and her mother's, and no one could remember how or why it started. We only knew we must continue. Even the girls knew. And while sometimes they went weeping, they always went willingly. That November day, however, black carriages were far from my mind as I wandered through the market, arm in arm with my best girlfriend, Nadia.
Bella, look at these apples.
Red as rubies and big as a fist. How much?
Half copper a bag.
For that, they should be real rubies. Two bags for half a copper.
Two bags, half a copper, and tell no one. I'm ashamed to call myself a merchant.
Neither Nadia nor I had ever really worried about the black carriage, if we thought of it at all that day. For it was the time of year when it came. We thought it would likely come for the town manager's daughter. Katya was lovely as a summer meadow, charming as a kitten, and pious as a judge. More ideal sacrificial fodder could not be imagined.
It looks like rain.
Let's go mushrooming tomorrow. There should be plenty.
All right. I'll meet you here at noon.
I'll bring you a basket. Good night, Nadia.
Good night, Bella.
Oh, bother. As I ran through the darkening afternoon, I thought only of reaching home before my woolen cloak was soaked through. Two great black horses churned the mud of our dooryard. The black carriage hitched behind them. A shadowy figure hunched beneath the tarp on the driver's bench, and my parents stood with gray faces and wet, hollow eyes. Here, take the apples, Mother. And don't cry. It will be all right. May I ride up front?
Yeah, as you wish. Yep.
They don't like being out tonight.
They don't care much for me.
Why? Are you cruel to them?
Of course not. They're valuable. And not mine. I'm very careful with them.
Then I suppose you'll be careful with me as well.
As I would of gold and jewels, miss.
How far is the castle?
Nearly at the top.
Tell me about the beast.
What do you wish to know, miss?
Everything. In the village, we knew nothing of the beast, save that he dwelt in the castle above and claimed a girl each year. Is he so terrible? I was young, you know. The young always have more curiosity than caution. I wanted to see this beast with my own eyes, since history proved it would not kill me.
He's not terrible to look upon.
Then he is terrible in other ways.
What do the other girls say of him?
Nothing. The blank eyes of the other girls troubled me. What could be so horrible that they could not let themselves remember? and yet gave me courage. For if it were so horrible, at least I would forget. And there, quite suddenly, was the castle, crouched at the end of the road like a lurking animal. The moon was two nights shy of full, and beneath its light the stone walls and towers looked white, like bones.
Ho now, ho! Here, miss. Let me help you down. It's warmer inside. Come along. This is the great hall. The kitchens are that way, and your chamber is upstairs.
The hall was vast and empty. The ceiling lost in shadows and cobwebs. A fire large enough to roast an ox whole blazed at the far end, with an enormous black iron cauldron suspended in the flames.
This way, miss. Please. Master?
I faltered there at the last, I admit, on the threshold of the beast's very lair.
Show her in, Abel. And then you may retire.
Good evening, miss.
The beast sat in a great carved chair, in a circle of light from a tall candle. His hair was very long and pale and silky as cream. His face was whiter still, white and smooth and handsome as a statue's. But his eyes, red as apples in the market. They held my gaze fast.
Be seated, if you please.
I did so, and he studied me rather as a small boy observes a crawling beetle. My assurance dissolved beneath his crimson eyes. My safety had been only an illusion. Small boys, after all, tear beetles to pieces for no better reason than boredom. The beast might do anything, and I had come here of my own free will.
Are you frightened, Bella?
Yes.
You know that you will leave here in 7 days, do you not? You will be well cared for and completely unharmed, with the exception of the requirements of the arrangement, and then return to your family and home.
What are the requirements of the arrangement? Will you tell me?
And when I do, will you sob and beg? No, I do not think you will.
Do the other girls?
Some of them have, yes. Some have waited until later to plead, and some never did. But I have never been asked so plainly and calmly.
Perhaps Abel has drugged me.
I think not. Although he did choose well this time.
I rather liked his smile. Fascination had overwhelmed fear once again, and I was entranced by this strange creature who looked so much like a man, and yet was so clearly not.
I cannot explain to you, Bella, and you would not understand if I did. But there are forces that I am in constant struggle with. I must keep my powers at full strength to combat them, and regrettably, that strength is fed by the blood of the innocent. Tonight, in the next 2 nights, then you will rest. Rest and forget. I am sorry I must do this, but there is no choice. The safety of your village depends on it.
He took me then, with those black-gloved hands, and his teeth were at my throat. But he was gentle and kind, as though I were a delicate, fragile thing, and not a healthy young woman brimming over with the red life he needed. Even as the blood flowed, there was no pain, no fear, only his scarlet eyes and his cool, impossible kiss. I woke on a rather nice feather bed, fully clothed, the sun's rays high and bright through the leaded window. I had slept late and felt thick-headed and slow as I sat up and stretched.
Oh, my God.
And then I remembered. My hand flew to my throat, felt the sore spots, two little marks no bigger than insect bites. I have to go. I have to go home. I can't stay here. Home, eh? Back to those who'd sent me here in the first place? Home, where they knew perfectly well there was something dark and corrupt in the castle, and yet they sent a daughter there each year? No, I could not go home. Nor did I blame them, I should add. They sent one child because they feared to lose them all. They were only doing what they thought best. Two more nights. Two more nights with the beast. At the thought of him, not the terrible word vampire that kept creeping into my head, but the beast himself, I felt neither fear nor disgust, but a fluttering thrill. He had charmed me, as a snake charms a bird, but he had not devoured me. I, who had wanted to see for myself, had had the beast's fangs in my very throat. He had drunk of my blood, and I still lived. And I felt as though I had discovered a dark, shining, immense secret. But there were many hours before nightfall, and perhaps I would be wise to pass some of them questioning Abel. Something the beast had said last night rang in my mind like an off-key note.
What are you doing out here?
Am I forbidden?
No, I'm sorry, Miss. Please pardon my discourtesy.
If you will answer a question I have.
I will if I can, miss.
Was it the beast who chose me? Or was it you?
Miss, I'm sorry,
It's always you, isn't it? Everyone thinks it must be him, that you only describe us, but you're the one.
Miss, please.
How can you do it? Betray your own kind to that creature?
I have no choice.
You mean you feed him maidens to protect your own life? Coward.
No, miss, please. I mean, I cannot do otherwise. The beast has me in his power. You must understand, it is his will that controls mine. I must serve him as he wishes, bring him what he desires. I cannot refuse. Please, please, Miss Bella, please believe me. If I could take my own life to end this, I would. If I could take his, I would. But I can do neither. I'm his puppet.
How horrible, I thought. At least I would be freed in a few more days. At least I knew that my time with the beast was spent in the service of my village and family to protect them. Abel had to live here forever. And with the knowledge of his own part in the beast's bloody perversions. Why me? Why not Katya? She's much prettier and more beloved. Wasn't I a petty little thing?
I must choose a girl who has the courage to see it through. I've gotten very good at recognizing that courage. I've been waiting for you to be of age for several years now, Bella, because I knew I'd finally found the girl strong enough to help me end this nightmare forever.
You said you were in his power, that his will controls yours.
I cannot move against him myself. God knows I've tried. I can't even think of raising a hand to him during the night. If I come near him while he sleeps, I fall asleep myself until he rises.
Does he sleep now?
Yes, till the sun sets. I would not dare to speak so openly. Bella, I cannot do it, but you can. You can kill the beast and free your village from his extortion.
Now?
No. Tomorrow night is the time to strike. I will tell you all you must know tomorrow. Can you bear to have him drink from you again tonight?
Yes.
Could I bear it? I trembled at the thought, but not from dread. Bear it. I craved it.
Then you will help me. You will kill the beast and free us both. Free us all.
I told him yes. God and beast forgive me. I told him yes. I was thinking of next year's girl. And the one after her. And the one after her. And he was, after all, a beast. Was he not? He was a monster, not a man. Not our rightful lord or king. It was a demon. A vampire. I was here on pains to keep my village safe from the beast. That was my task. How better could I do that than by destroying him? And in the red pools of his eyes that night, I sought accusation and found only kindness, even gratitude.
I wished his hands would be hard and grasping, that he would bruise me. His teeth rend my flesh, that he would act like the monster he was. But he was as tender as before. I could not hate him, could not fear him. I wanted to stay wrapped in his arms forever, my blood flowing into him, and him loving me for it. He needed me, as I had never been needed by anyone and never would be again. And then he carried me like a child to my room, tucked me into bed. But I would not let him go.
Mor, come back.
I must not take more from you, child. Not with another night still to come.
Please.
He pressed a cool, benevolent kiss to my forehead and slipped away into the shadows. I slept only an hour or two before my eyes flew open. The moon blazed through the window, only a fingernail's crescent from fall, and there was madness in her glow. I could smell it like smoke.
I must be mad to have come here, to have stayed here, to feel this way.
The woman in the moon only mocked me, and her rays worked their lunatic will. I slipped from my clothes and stood naked in the window, stone and flesh in the moonlight.
Oh, child, you are too beautiful for me to bear.
As though I had summoned him, and hadn't I? I turned to him, and he came to me, and I fell into his embrace.
Bella.
In that moment, I loved him. And yet tomorrow night, I meant to kill him. Who was the monster? It was only the moon that dazzled my eyes and made them sting and tear. Only the moon. And in the morning, I told myself nothing had changed. Hold to the course you have chosen and do not question. Do not think of the slow, deep kindness you felt in his undead heart. Do not think of your own heart throbbing with sympathy for his terrible loneliness. Do not think of his eternal eyes. I dressed and went searching for Abel. He was easy enough to find. Horses only sounded like that when he was near.
Is it terrible?
Not so bad. It is brief, and I sleep just after.
It was the last time for you or anyone. Listen closely. Bella, there is only one way to kill the beast. There is a weapon here, hidden in the hayloft. You must retrieve it. I can touch no weapons.
I climbed the ladder to the hayloft and followed Abel's directions, digging beneath great stacks of hay. At last, I uncovered a small, very heavy, leather-wrapped parcel. Is this it?
Yes.
Down on the stable floor, I unwrapped the package. The leather was lined with very thin pieces of heavy, dull gray metal. Then there were several layers of linen. Nestled in the old, brittle fabric was a small and gleaming dagger, its hilt and blade both wrought of silver.
Silver is deadly to the beast. One thrust into his heart, and he will fall, and we will be free.
The pretty, shiny thing, small as a toy, was suddenly ugly in my eyes.
The wrapping is lined in lead. You must keep it closed inside the castle, or he will sense it.
I held the dagger in my hand and hated it. I tried to imagine plunging it into the beast, and I knew I could not. It felt like an instrument of murder, not justice.
Think of next year, Bella. Think of the next girl I will have to bring here. You will know her. The village is small. Rosemary, maybe, or Eliza. She will bleed, and you will be safe in your bed. Will she be as brave as you, or will she tremble and cry? Maybe you'll hear her screams if the wind is right.
Stop it.
Who will be strong enough to do it if you cannot?
He had me. I could not turn away now. I was this year's girl. It was my duty. The thought of the black carriage in Rosemary's yard, or Eliza's, or Nadia's. No. All right, I'll do it. When?
Before he drinks. Before he enchants you.
He enchanted me at that moment from wherever he slept.
He did not need to have my blood in his mouth for that.
Thank you, Bella. I have waited so long for a girl as brave and selfless as you.
Ultimately, it was the thought of next year's girl, of course, that steeled my resolve. I went to the Beast's lair that night with a silver dagger hidden in the folds of my skirt and a stone heart in my chest.
Come in, Bella.
He smiled at me, and I smiled back, my heart cracking, my resolve melting once again. I did not hate him. He inspired not fear and revulsion, but awe and wonder, even sorrow, for he was so alone. And how much worse loneliness must be if it's eternal. Not even the comfort of death to look forward to. Perhaps then I might be doing him a kindness after all. Perhaps he had been waiting all these years, just as Abel had, for the maiden brave and merciful enough to put him out of his endless misery.
I will not see you after tonight, Bella. You must begin to forget before you return home.
I will never forget you.
You will. I will see to it. It is best. But not just yet. We have one more dance together. Come here, child.
All thoughts of murder, merciful or otherwise, fled my mind when he reached for me. Never mind, I thought. I take it all back. I could harm such an extraordinary being no more than I could rip the wings from an angel's shoulders.
Oh, I can't.
Bella, have I hurt you?
No, not you. Never you.
I rested my head against him. It was suddenly so heavy. Why was this my decision to make? What in my sheltered few years of life qualified me? I wanted only to do the right thing, and was less sure than ever of what that was, or for what reason.
What troubles you, Bella? Something is wrong.
I could not speak. I could not move. The Beast gathered me up in his arms and dropped me instantly, a look of horror on his white face. The merest brush of silver through the fabric of my skirts, and he reeled, stunned, the coals of his eyes bursting aflame. And I panicked. It no longer mattered if I had meant to begin. It had begun without me. I tore the dagger free.
Bella, no! Wait!
And I stabbed him in the heart. I dropped to my knees beside him, horrified, and plucked the dagger out. Too late. It was a mortal wound, and had made him mortal as well. Already his eyes were dim as embers.
Bella, child.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean... Here, drink from me.
Too late. Bella, you must hurry.
What can I do? Tell me.
But the embers went out. The Beast was dead. I had killed him.
No, no, no.
I could feel it in my bones. This was wrong. It was wretched and cruel, and I could not imagine how I had gotten here. With the Beast lying dead at my feet, his blood on my gown, on my hands. The evil spell had not lifted, and the night still held horrors.
Abel?
The great hall was deserted. The full moon blinded me as I stepped from the castle. Abel? Are you out here? It's finished. It's done.
No.
He stepped from the shadows and stood before me. And he was different. Abel?
Bella. Thank you, girl. You have done well.
I sat down on the cold stone steps and watched as Abel became something else. Something ancient and dreadful beneath the moon.
You freed your precious village from the beast. Brave little maiden. Succulent little morsel.
You tricked me so easily, Abel. You should be ashamed of yourself.
I leave shame to you. You were so easy to fool because you were so sincere of heart. Learn cynicism, child. It is your only hope of survival.
You've schooled me well. Don't fear. Did the beast keep us safe from you all those years?
Of course, silly girl. He was so old and tired. He lived only to protect your little village. He had grown so fond of you pathetic people.
He came towards me, his great paws silent on the stone. I wondered how I could understand the words from that slavering, fanged red mouth. Why didn't he just kill you?
He could not. He could only keep me in thrall. His powers replenished by a few drops of sweet blood each year. But that was enough to keep me from my true form. Until you, Bella, you brave, good-hearted simpleton.
He climbed the steps to me, all traces of humanity gone. He was shaggy and wild and reeking of rotten flesh. The ghosts of plump, screaming dinners.
Are you afraid now, miss?
Just do it if you mean to.
What a fine martyr you make, Bella.
He lunged at me with those terrible jaws, the moon flashing on his white fangs, meaning to tear out my throat.
Oh, no, you treacherous cow!
He backed away down the steps bristling, and I realized I still held the silver dagger in my hand, its blade dark with the poor beast's blood. This, I held it out towards him. He retreated still further down to the courtyard. Oh, I was really so stupid. I can touch no weapons, and I believed you.
You were perfect, you little fool. And in the gratitude for your service, I'll let you live a few hours longer.
I'll still have this when we meet again.
But I'll be stronger then, well-fed. And that little thorn won't even pierce my hide to the meat. You can't cower behind that trinket forever, Bella. You're mine, and I will taste your flesh. Silver be damned.
I don't believe I cowered.
Oh, but you will. Hide in the castle, why don't you? And we'll make a game of it when I return. While you wait, you can amuse yourself by imagining the fates of your darling parents, your precious Nadia. Perhaps you'll remember fear before I come for you.
Abel, or the thing he had become, had always been beneath his skin, vanished down the rocky trail leading to my home. I thought I would just sit there on the steps of that empty castle until I froze or starved or turned to stone. It didn't seem fair. I had always been such a good girl. I had done as I was told. Go to the castle, and I went. Let me drink from you, and I did. Kill the beast, and I did. And now look, everything was wrong and could not be put right. I turned the dagger over in my hand. I touched the beast's blood, still wet. I put my fingers to my lips, tasted the beast's blood. Oh, something flowed into me. Strength, yes, but more than that, feeling. My heart broke all over again. I trembled with fear, and at last, my outrage kindled and caught fire. All right, then, there was no time to spare. Abel might even now be reaching the village. Standing in the baking heat before the fireplace, I kissed the dagger before I dropped it into the iron cauldron. Thank you. How little Abel must have thought of me to leave me there like that. It would be sweet to see the shock in his eyes when the heavy blade of the axe bit in and its fatal coating rushed through his blood. The molten silver had smoked when I dipped the axe head in, and the freshly honed edge flashed white in the moonlight. I rode to my destiny at a gallop, with sharp, gleaming death in my hand. I would protect my village. The head of the true beast would roll at my feet before the sun rose.
There's more audio theater coming up right after these messages.
This is Community Radio. It's KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, online and archived at kfai.org. Sure, take a deep breath. Have another hit of fresh air.
You're listening to Audio Theater on Sound Effects of Radio Playground here on KFAI Fresh Air Radio. End of period.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, we just heard Next Year's Girl, but we really have to include the credits.
Next Year's Girl starred Laura Faye Smith, Tim McKinney, Tony Lima, and Sam A. Mowry. Original music was composed by Mark Rose. This was the first script from Cynthia McGeehan's Writers on the Air workshop. Production was by Sam A. Mowry, especially for stage and studio with D. May Roberts on KBOO 90.7 FM. Until next time, we at the Willamette Radio Workshop remain obediently yours.
Next Year's Girl won a Gold Ogle Award for the Best Horror Audio Production of the Year in 2004. And now I'm going to begin parts of a series for you. I'm only going to play four episodes. The series is called Tales from the Museum. It comes from darkerprojects.com. And I'll only play four episodes so you can find the rest of them for yourself. The stories are about a museum in Johnson City, Tennessee, where very odd things happen. And it's largely told from the point of view of a fellow who was hired specifically for this museum. His name is Keith Nash, and here's what he has to say about working there.
Mr. Nash, you seem very accepting of all of this. You strike me as someone who, well, should be a serious skeptic.
Ma'am, I've been here for 6 months. In those 6 months, I've seen and experienced a few things that just don't make sense. There are several people like that here. I'm just glad we're not all crazy.
Oh, you're not crazy. Not yet.
So our first episode of Tales of the Museum is number 4. It's about the second annual Haunted Museum Mystery Tour, in which psychics and mediums and fans of the occult all gather for an overnight program of supernatural activity. But you'll never know quite what's going to happen. This is episode 4 from Tales of the Museum, and it's called Beneath the Foundation.
Darker Projects presents Tales from the Museum, a miniseries written by Charles Russell, starring Perry Whittle as Keith Nash.
They were a well-behaved crowd, but quite excited just the same. I could see the same hopeful glow in each of their eyes, that sparkle that says, I want to believe. I folded my arms and leaned back against the wall to watch the show, and tried my best to keep a straight face.
Hello? Hello? May I have your attention, please? Is this thing on? Okay. Hello? Hi, and thank you. Greetings, fellow psychic investigators. On behalf of the New South Psychic Investigator Society, I welcome each of you to the 3rd Annual Haunted Museum Tour.
I cannot believe Pierpont is letting this happen.
Are you kidding? Do you know how much money these people are paying for this?
A lot, I'm sure.
As some of you know, our first expedition consisted of 15 of us. In the second expedition, we had 50 researchers. Yeah. Tonight, there are over 75 of us, including a TV news crew. The management of this museum has asked me to remind each of you to stay within your assigned groups during the tour and your assigned research area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We can't have another incident like last year. No, that would be bad.
Incident?
Ouija board team on the roof. It's a long story.
Hey, guys.
Casey, well, don't you look dapper in your I Survived the Haunted Museum Tour t-shirt?
It glows in the dark, too. Boss, I need a favor. A really big favor.
Let's hear it.
Okay, I'm with Group 5 over there. You see those two goth girls?
The twins?
Harmony and Joy. They do tarot cards. Anyway, they are, like, really into spiders. They have spider tattoos on their arms, even. Would you be upset if I cut them from the herd later on and took them through the arachnid room? I was thinking they might get a charge if I introduced them to Penelope.
Just don't let her get out of her cage. You know how she gets.
Thanks, boss. Hey, ladies.
Penelope?
Our giant tarantula. Big, hairy, and ugly. I walked in there a few days ago. She was snacking on a chihuahua.
Ew!
The doors will be locking in 15 minutes at midnight. They will reopen tomorrow morning at 7:30, right after breakfast. Oh, and the big news this year, the blackout. That's right. It's confirmed the lights in the museum will go out for 1 hour tonight. This will make a zone with minimal electronic interference. Isn't that magnificent? I know, right? So, everybody mingle and get to know each other. Remember, whether skeptic or believer, we're all stuck together for the next 7.5 hours. And there's no telling what you might bump into tonight. Now, everybody have fun. I'll be here if you need me. Thanks. Mr. Nash, a word, please. Oh, good evening, Dr. Mancuso. Mr. Nash, is everything in readiness?
Absolutely. I have 2 staff people with each group and people on patrol in the hallways. I have the secure areas cordoned off, and I was even able to cash in a favor and get 2 EMTs standing by downstairs.
Oh, excellent. And the breakfast buffet?
Just got off the phone with the caterer. There'll be hot beverages, juices, and an assortment of vegetarian and non-vegetarian foods.
Mr. Nash, you must have been a wedding planner in a previous life. If you had been here last year, we wouldn't have had to go to McDonald's.
Well, last year I was still a cop.
Oh, good-looking, organized, a hint of danger. I like that. Oh, Vanessa. Vanessa, I need to speak with you.
Helene, please don't ever leave me alone with that woman.
What, you don't like the crazy mystic woman?
Let's change the subject. What about those clay tablets the Smithsonian sent you? You still translating?
I was right. It's a different version of Gilgamesh, but without Enkidu.
That's smart person talk again, isn't it?
I have to finish up my report and hand those tablets over to the courier in the morning. Speaking of that blackout, you're sure the lights stay on in my building, right?
The East Wing won't be affected, just the museum proper and the annex. The offices and the labs will be safe and illuminated.
Excellent. We'll see you at breakfast. Does Marla know the caterers you hired are all ex-cons?
Doesn't mean that they can't put out a fine buffet. Besides, they're a legit startup business and they need the work.
Righto. See you in the morning.
All right, people. The tours will be starting in 20 minutes. Check your rosters and start rounding your groups up. I want this smooth and by the numbers. All right, folks, 15 minutes to zero hour. All groups check in now.
Group one, we're setting up in the main gallery. All present accounted for.
Group two, the techno geeks are entering the auditorium now. All present and accounted for.
Group three here, sir, in the arboretum. All present and accounted for.
Group four, group and TV crew accounted for in the archive.
Group five, Wickle.
Everybody sit tight. The clock is running. Going dark in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now running on emergency lights for 1 hour. Emergency traffic only on the radios. Here's hoping nothing happens. What the?
Mr. Nash? Mr. Nash, please come to the second floor gallery and please hurry.
Mala?
We're in here. The taxidermy room.
Too many. I can't. No.
Oh, it happened as soon as the lights went out. This happened.
I can't. Hadrian, help me.
I'm calling the EMTs.
No.
Don't worry. She's fine.
Hey, Adrian? Is that you?
Hello, Mala. It's a pleasure to finally speak with you.
What just happened?
My niece, Angie. She's a channeler. Spirits speak through her. She has an unbelievable talent. She's been in touch with Adrian here for about 3 weeks now.
She's a natural. You shouldn't have brought her. When the lights went out, she was hit with a flood of voices at once. Angie's still inexperienced. She couldn't guard herself. Good thing you dragged her in here, Mala. There's no ethereal action in this room.
None?
Well, there is a ghost cat in that corner over there, but he's just a cat.
And where is Angie?
I guess you could say that she's in the back of her own mind. Don't worry, she's okay. She knows what's going on. I can't make her body do something she doesn't want it to. Help me up, Mr. Nash. Thank you.
So this joint really is haunted. Some of us are not insane.
Mr. Nash, there are numerous spirits living here. This building has been many things, hasn't it? A hospital, a school, an office building, now a museum. The ghosts are from overlapping time frames. They have different levels of awareness, but it was strange. Most of the voices, they weren't begging or asking for anything. They were trying to tell her something. Something important.
What?
I don't know. It was about something under the foundation. Mr. Nash, you wouldn't have happened to have access to the building blueprints, would you?
Well, the originals were lost, but I do have some copies that were pieced together a few years ago. They're in my office.
That might work.
Here we go.
Mr. Nash, do you read?
Nash here.
Sir, we might have something weird going on here. The computer nerds with all the electronic gear, they say that there was just a major spike in the ambient level of bioelectromagnetic activity. Right now, they're scanning the auditorium for temperature fluctuations.
Keep me posted.
10-4.
Adrian, would you know anything about, Mala? Should she look like that?
Like what?
Like she's in a trance.
Oh, Adrian stepped out for a minute. She's gonna see what she could find out. Mr. Nash, you seem very accepting of all of this. You strike me as someone who, well, should be a serious skeptic.
Ma'am, I've been here for 6 months. In those 6 months, I've seen and experienced a few things that just don't make sense. There are several people like that here. I'm just glad we're not all crazy.
Oh, you're not crazy. Not yet.
There's a man. He's buried beneath this building. He's screaming. He's so alone. He doesn't even remember his name. That's what the other ghosts were trying to tell Angie. They wanted her to help him because...
What kind of help?
Well, there are several ways to become disembodied or entrapped. You can pass away during certain astronomical cycles. You can pass away with unfinished business. You can experience a true tragedy.
He doesn't remember what happened. The others say that he has always been down there, screaming. He's begging for help. He's screaming louder now. He knows I can hear him. The others want to help him, but they can't.
Why not?
He is under the building, beneath the foundation. The others, they dare not go down. There's something else down there.
Boy.
A presence. Something ancient. Something trapped there. It's evil. It's ancient.
Oh.
They told me it was something so old, so evil. It can't be described.
So what do we need to do?
We need to go downstairs and find the screaming man. We have to find him and release him. Now.
Can we wait for the lights to come back on?
No. The Devourer is growing in strength. Apparently the lights in the building have been keeping it at bay. If it breaks loose of whatever is holding it down there, everybody in this building will be at risk.
Figures. Mala, you know where all the groups are. Go circulate and keep an eye on things. Adrienne, let's grab a couple flashlights. All aboard. Express elevator to the bowels of the building. Nervous?
Yes. Yes, I am. You?
Of course I am. Is our friend still screaming?
More like he's weeping. He knows we're coming, but he's afraid we won't find him. Man, I'd kill for a smoke right now.
And the other thing?
It's still there. Waiting. I can't tell where. I can sense it, though.
Here we are. Good. The emergency lights are on.
It's still very dark.
What do you say we find him and get out?
Good plan.
That was the furnace, I hope. Come on, let's make this fast.
Yes. He's down this hall. Poor man. He's weeping. Here. Here, he's behind this door. I can hear him.
Storage 2B. Here we go. This should be it.
Group 2 calling Nash. Come in, please.
Nash, what is it?
Me again, sir. The computer nerds just read another electromagnetic spike. They're also saying that there is an 8-degree temperature variance in the center of the auditorium.
This is Group 1. Hey, look. For what it's worth, I've got a medium here who keeps telling me that something is blocking her reception.
Groups 3, 4, and 5, check in. Anything happening?
No, sir. Negative.
Wickle.
All units, keep me posted.
Concerned?
Oh, the auditorium is directly above us. Let's find our screamer.
It's hard to see in this room. He's here, right here, under the floor. We have to get him out.
How? This is thick concrete.
We just have to crack it. I think any size opening will do.
I'll be right back.
Where are you going?
Out here. There's a tool lock. Aha!
One sledgehammer. Where?
Right here. The floor, right here. Please hurry. He's in agony.
Is there anything left of this guy?
No, just a spirit trace. Again. Hit it again. He's almost free.
That him?
Yes, he's free. He says thank you. He says, look out!
Emergency, emergency. Any radio unit, respond. This is Nash. All units, respond.
Door won't hold it. It's coming through.
I need someone to get to the breaker room and throw the switch for the basement lights. Someone respond.
What happened?
Oh, the lights came on.
Nash, are you down here?
We're in the storage room.
Casey was trying to call you on the walkie-talkies. You didn't answer, so he called me. I found Marla, and she told me that... What happened to the door? It looks like a truck hit it.
Would you believe something ancient and evil?
Business as usual, you mean.
Mr. Nash, may I speak with you?
Sure, come on in. Just knock that stuff out of the chair. But are you Angie or Adrienne?
I'm Angie. I won't be long. I just wanted to thank you. Thank you for everything. For last night. You didn't have to take any part of it seriously.
Like I told Mala, I'm just happy to know I'm not crazy.
You've had doubts?
Angie, I was in the Gulf War. I was an undercover narcotics cop. I've actually had people try to kill me, but I was always a survivor. But this place, it can get to you. Apparently, I belong to the sad group of people who can see and hear some of the things in this place. Sometimes these images get into my head. You know, there's this broom closet just down the hall. I can't even bring myself to touch the doorknob.
Good thing. Adrienne told me that someone was murdered in there back in 1893.
Thank you for sharing.
Well, Adrienne wanted me to tell you that the ghosts in the building mean no harm, except for that thing in the basement.
Ugh, that's what I'm typing up. I want a backup generator on those lights down there.
And we also wanted you to know that if you need any help, Mullen is where to reach us.
Adrienne? I'm glad to hear that. Like I said, this place...
We know. We have to go. Mulla's waiting.
Before you go, can I ask you a question? Since you're my first ghost. If it's too personal, just say so.
Sure.
What were you before you died?
I died in a car wreck. Fort Lauderdale in 1964. I was on my way to work. I was on the evening shift at Chez Mayhem, a go-go.
You were a go-go dancer?
I was a headliner. We'll see you around. Hello, Dr. Mancuso.
Well, Nash, I just handed those tablets over to the courier. How about walking me to my car, big boy?
No problem.
Hey, I didn't know you smoked.
I don't. Gave it up years ago. What's that, a matchbook?
It says, Girls, 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 Shay Mayhem at Go-Go, Downtown Fort Lauderdale. Where did you find this?
It's a gift. From someone I met last night.
You've been listening to Tales from the Museum, Episode 4, Beneath the Foundation, written by Charles Russell. Featured in the cast were Perry Whittle as Keith Nash, Alistair Stewart as Casey, Amanda Fitzwater as Dr. Helene Mancuso, M. Sierra Garcia as Mala Monroe, and April Smith as Angie Monroe and Adrian. Additional voices by Colin Snow, Zach Fester, M.J. Cockburn, and Paula Cartwright. Original music composed by Joey Stuckey and Kevin McLeod. The series is produced by Ellie Hirschman. Post-production by M.J. Cockburn. The executive producer for Darker Projects is Eric Busby. This has been a Darker Projects production.
Darker Projects cannot be held responsible for any abnormal psychic phenomena that may occur during the playback of this episode.
That was episode 4 of Tales of the Museum. There are 13 episodes in the series. Next week I will bring you episode 11, and we'll finish off the conclusion of the series for you. If you want to hear the rest of those episodes, you can pick them all up, download them, or listen to them streaming at darkerprojects.com. Well, you've been listening to Sound Effects, a Radio Playground. I'm your host, Jerry Stearns, and next week we'll also have other spooky sorts of stories, along with another episode from the museum. Hope you'll join us then for more audio theater on the radio. Stick around for Abby's Room for One. It's not spooky at all. Join us again next week for more modern audio theater and comedy on Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, here on Fresh Air Radio.
In recognition of the freedom of speech protections on the First Amendment and the FCC's relaxed policy on late night and overnight language, this KFAA program may include song lyrics that some listeners might find objectionable. Listener discretion is advised.
Support for KFAI comes in part from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Turn, Turn, Turn with Triple Fiddle Friday, June 5th. Turn, Turn, Turn returns to the Cedar stage for their first full band show since the release of their third album, All Hat, No Cattle. They'll be joined on stage by String Collective, Triple Fiddle. This show will also mark the release of their brand new EP. More information about Turn, Turn, Turn with Triple Fiddle's EP release party is available at thecedar.org.
Support for KFAI comes from the Amsterdam Bar and Hall, presenting Impaler, Friday, June 12th.
Minneapolis' own Impaler takes the Amsterdam stage by storm for the release of their latest album, Covered in Dirt.
Impaler has been shock-rocking the Twin Cities for over 40 years, and they show no signs of slowing down.
Joining them for the all-ages festivities are Dumpster Juice and Extermination Day. Opening the show is Die Hardcore.
More information about Impaler's album release show at the Amsterdam can be found at AmsterdamBarAndHall.com.
You can't always get what you want, but you try sometimes. You get what you need.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, going out to the stratosphere, or on the web at www.kfai.org, where you can catch this train wreck for the next 2 weeks. It's archived. This is Abby's Room for One Radio. You're at the end of your week.